And on the phone with me now from Park City Film, Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. We've got two extraordinary films programmed for the holiday weekend. Our weekend feature film is The Two Popes, which is honestly one of the best films I saw at this year's Telluride Film Festival, and super excited to be bringing it back to Park City. It's a thought-provoking, insightful, very clever, and surprisingly funny film. It features award-winning performances by Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce as Popes Benedict and Francis, respectively. The film is about the unexpected resignation of Pope Benedict XVI and transition of power to the current Pope Francis. It's a clever speculation about the conversations that transpired between the two men during this time that touch on faith, ambition, and moral responsibility. The Two Popes is rated PG-13. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday at 8, and then again Sunday at 6. And then on Monday evening, we partner with the Park City Library to present the holiday classic, It's a Wonderful Life, starring Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed. This is a story about George Bailey, who saves an angel and gets a glimpse of what life would have been like if he'd not never been born, and how much he has to live for. If you come early, you can check out the Nuzzles Snuggle Lounge, a.k.a. Puppies, hot cocoa, cookies, crafts from Wasatch and Will and Santa. Doors will open at 6 p.m., and we're also helping the Sunrise Rotary collect donations for the Christian Center's food bank. So please consider bringing something to help out families in need over the holidays. Showtime for the film is 7 p.m., and admission to the film and pre-film events is free. You can check out the trailers for both of these films and see what we have programmed leading into the Sundance Film Festival. We've got some award-winning films on deck there at parkcityfilm.org. And then grab your friends, family, and favorite popcorn bowl and come join us in the Jim Santee Auditorium inside the Park City Library Building. Have a happy holiday.
Okay, thanks, Katie. 8:17 now. Good morning. Well, the Live Like Sam Foundation is inviting community members to get their hands dirty and re-stamp their handprints on the newly painted Live Like Sam rails at Park City Mountain Resort tomorrow. In the studio with details, I have Ron Jackenthal. He's Sam's dad, also the founder and director of the Live Like Sam Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning.
So if you would just start, give us a little bit of background for those who may not have been fortunate enough to meet Sam and how we got to this point.
You bet. So Sam had, as many know, passed away in a ski accident 4 years ago. And a few months later, once things started to settle, we were in discussions with a number of the executives at Vail and Park City Mountain Resort, specifically Bill Rock, about what could we do to honor Sam at his home mountain, Park City Mountain Resort, where he won U.S. Junior Nationals and where he grew up skiing, and he had close bonds. And we landed on the idea that we would form a coalition between Vail employees and Park City Mountain Terrain Park group, Sam's teammates, Sam's coaches, Sam's friends, and they would collaborate and create a collection of pipe and park and rail features that would be painted in blue, honoring Sam, which is his favorite color, and would have I Ride for Sam. And eventually we would have a ceremony where kids would come and teammates and supporters, and they'd get their hands in gloves and put them in paint and put their handprints on a rail surrounding two giant handprints of Sam, which are in gold, which are actually a copy of Sam's handprint.
Yeah, so that was unveiled in January of 2017. In the meantime, we've had skiers and snowboarders up there just kind of crashing into the rails and scraping them up, so the resort decided to repaint them.
Yeah, you bet. So the rails are by far some of the most popular pipe and park features. There's actually five pieces, which either they can be put together or separate, and they get moved around the park a lot, but they are definitely one of the most highly demanded and used set of features. So after 3 years of phenomenal use and abuse, as you might say, it's time to repaint them. So we started working with Mike Gore and his team to figure out, you know, what can we do to just keep beautifying these rails and keep them in action and keep them looking good. So they have been repainted, the takeoff rail and the landing rail. So the handprints that were on there are now gone. Vail was cool enough to put livelikesam.org for us, since we actually officially launched about 10 months ago with our foundation. And on Friday at 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock at the bottom of First Time Resort at Park City Mountain, we're going to have kind of a celebration, pretty simple, but we're really inviting any of the youth in the community that want to come out and get their handprints on the rail. Something where they can come out and, you know, again, glove and paint, and we'll have stickers and some giveaways and bracelets and whatnot. It'll just be a fun way to end the ski day, start the holiday season, and keep Sam in our heart and kind of pass it on to the next generation of skiers.
What's the significance of the handprints?
The thought was we had handprints of Sam from Australia, and when we were in the hospital, one of the nurses had just said, "Would you like Sam's handprints?" And it seemed like a very odd question at the time. And the nurse had been there for 30 years. She was retiring that week. And I just looked at her, and she seemed to have a lot of wisdom. And I just deferred to the wisdom and said, "Sure." And sure enough, you know, 6 months to a year later, we actually found an incredible way to use the handprints. And it's really about Sam holding up the community, and the kids' handprints are the community holding up Sam and us holding up each other. And we even use Sam's gold handprint on some of our branding as well.
Okay, let's see. Meanwhile, you were at the Epic Promise Community Grant Foundation Awards last night. You did receive a grant then, and what are you going to do with that?
I did, yes. We were extremely honored and excited. We received our first Epic Grant Award last night. Feel great to be in this club amongst, you know, many great organizations in the community. Our intent is to use our grant to have a small event sometime in the spring or summer to thank our donors and kind of just continue to propel our foundation and the community.
Okay. So what is it the foundation's mission is?
The three things we focus on are needs-based and character-based scholarships, character-based education, and community integration.
Okay. And so how is it that you go about people just apply for the scholarships?
To date, we've predominantly done all of our scholarshiping with partners. So we've done a lot in our community with YSA, the Youth Sports Alliance, which I'm on the board of and a huge believer in. We've done scholarships with USASA, the feeder organization to the U.S. Ski and Snowboard that covers about 3,000 kids nationally. We've worked with Woodward as an example to create scholarships to let young athletes compete for a free week at camp, and they're doing it through means such as writing 250-word essays around what does it mean to live like Sam, or live a life of gratitude, or live a life of character, or give back. It's been very fulfilling for everybody on all sides of the equation.
Yeah. So how many scholarships do you anticipate kind of handing out each year?
It's changing because we're growing super, super fast. We've been directly or indirectly involed in probably 50 scholarships so far, and I think that'll double this year.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be kind of a slopestyle or big air athlete?
Nope. No, we don't discriminate here at Live Like Sam. You know, I think competitive athlete, recreational athlete, really no athlete. There's clearly a tie-in to Sam in athletics, and we do believe that athletics helps create character, but you don't have to be an elite athlete or a winner athlete for that. And we also believe that there's an opportunity to really help our youth with character-based education and character-based living. And so that's the mission we're heading down, and we feel pretty good about it.
Okay. Ron, anything else you want to mention? Again, 3 to 5 tomorrow?
Yeah, 3 to 5 tomorrow. Base the first time. Just come out. Very casual. Just come out. Come find me. Give a hug. Let's get some handprints on the rail. I think it'll be really cool for the kids to be able to go by throughout the season and next season and see their own handprints. And again, a big shout out to Park City Mountain Resort. They've been incredibly supportive, and we're super grateful. And happy holidays to everyone.
Okay. Ron, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Ron Jackenthal, again, the director and founder of the Live Like Sam Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:24. Well, during November's municipal election, Heber City voters elected 3 new members to the City Council. Joining me this morning is one of those of the new council, Ryan Stack. Good morning to you, Ryan.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, where you're from, I mean, what you do.
Sure. So I'm a public prosecutor by trade. I've been with the Summit County Attorney's Office since 2011, and I was with Salt Lake City for about 3.5 years before that. So I've been prosecuting since 2007. Grew up in Southern California, did my schooling down there in San Diego, and moved out to Utah in 2006.
Okay. And then why the desire to run for city council?
You know, a number of years ago, about four and a half, I had the opportunity given to me to be able to serve on Heber City's Planning Commission. And I thought that would be a great way to get involved with the community, the place we were calling home. And through my time on the Planning Commission, just began to see a number of things, things I thought we were doing well and things where I thought the city needed some could change course to benefit us and in the future especially. And first and foremost, what really stuck out to me is how the city just kept playing from behind in terms of reacting to the growth pressures, reacting to what was happening. And I really believe that the city had an opportunity to start becoming more proactive, to not just respond to things, but to get ahead and direct and actually kind of take charge of its own future.
Yeah, so how does that work? I mean, you got a full-time job. Are you able to manage both?
I am. You know, city council, the elected city council members, it is a part-time position. I have spoken about this with my supervisors there at the county attorney's office before I even filed to run. I have their support. They've been great about it. And I have enough flexibility to be able to rearrange things in my schedule to make it work. And I've been able to do that with Planning Commission as well. And I'm just excited to hit the ground running and start serving.
Well, and as you mentioned, the defining issue certainly facing Heber City is growth. What are your suggestions, though, for getting out in front of it?
So right now, or I should say this past year, we've been working on the Envision Heber 2050 plan. That is the new master plan for Heber City. And our general plan now is, I think, is from 2000, 2003. And so much has changed since then. I don't think and back then we could have ever anticipated what's happened now. And so we've been working on that this past year. I've been serving on that steering committee for the new general plan. And so we are at kind of the concluding phases of that after soliciting public input throughout the past year through our open houses and our workshops. And that new general plan is starting to take shape and come to fruition. We're hoping to have something that the new city council can pass early next year. And that's where the rubber meets the road. That's when we start rewriting our codes to match the vision reflected in the new general plan. And that's going to be where we say, look, this is the trajectory we want to put the city on. And this is the vision we're putting into place. And we're going to say, you know what, we're going to stick to this. And this is how we believe we can best manage, direct, and influence what's coming into the city.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is that direction? I mean, are we talking about when we're rewriting the code, are we talking about downzoning areas? Are we talking about requiring more open space, more affordable housing? I mean, what are some of those? What is the direction of that plan?
Sure. It's multi-layered. You hit on a lot of those points, right? Downzoning is always a challenge because it tends to invite litigation. What we're looking at, right, is one, being responsive to a lot of the public feedback about creating and preserving open space. Granted, we have the Wasatch Open Lands Board that was created after the bond was passed a couple of years ago. But also looking at how we can incorporate more open space into developments coming in. And right, the elephant of the room is the Sorensen annexation, and looking at how we address that. Part of it is looking at, right, affordable housing. The state legislature is mandating more and more from cities and municipalities to address affordable housing. So making sure that we not just hit the floor from what the legislature says, but how can we do more to serve the people living in our community so that way the folks who are working in Heber can actually afford to live there, our teachers, our law enforcement, our first responders. And so it's looking at the general plan to say, how can we preserve open spaces where we have them and then cluster development in other areas to the benefit of more open spaces, right? Trying to require more in terms of parks and fields and things of that nature, preserving those important view sheds too.
Yeah. Sorensen does have vested development rights under its approval in Wasatch County. Does the Heber City Council have much say in how different that would look?
So Sorensen, right, and North Village as well, they've got pending annexation petitions with Heber City. Those petitions have been received, and the city's been working with those groups right now. And with an annexation petition, right, that is a legislative decision. And so we, as a city, can require certain conditions upon granting any annexation petition. So we have a little bit of wiggle room in terms of what we can ask for, what we can bake into the MDA, the Master Development Agreement, and say, well, we're considering your petition, but let's sit down, let's come to the table, and here's what we want to see. And the developer with Sorensen has been very receptive so far to a lot of what's in the Envision Heber process. We've been working with him along this way to say, this is what's going to be coming in the general plan. And it's not in perfect alignment, but not yet, but we continue to communicate with him and say, this is what we want to see. And so I imagine those lines of communication are going to stay open. We want to make sure that we're keeping them involved along the way, because you're right, they're vested under the county, but we can certainly work with them to change the shape of things as it potentially comes into the city.
Yeah, where is the access to Sorensen? Is it off of 32 there?
There will be access points off 32, right? Because if you look at the Sorensen annexation, there's land that borders 40 or will be accessible from 40, and then there's land that's accessible from 32. And so those will be the main access points.
Okay. And in terms of the airport master plan, where do you stand on that?
So that process has just been kicked off, is underway. Creating a new master plan is required by state law. And I think it's important that we continue to treat that process just like we did the Envision process, by which I mean soliciting public input, making sure that the public is heard, right? That's a city airport. It's the public's airport. And at the same time, we do have certain obligations with the FAA. So wanting to make sure that we do what's legally required of us, that we're not looking to be an antagonizing force, but a cooperative force, and to continue to receive that feedback, as the process gets going.
Yeah, a lot of people, though, I think that this process is just kind of opening the gates to airport expansion. How do you feel about expanding the airport beyond what it is today?
Sure. So let's step back just a moment from that. And I think what started a lot of the concern with airport expansion was a map that UDOT released earlier this year, talking about potential proposed bypass routes for those that western bypass we're looking at to hopefully become new US 40. And one of those proposed routes looked at moving 189. And I think that generated a lot of buzz, because the immediate reaction was this is a pretext to expand the airport. I haven't seen any support to expand the airport or that being the motivation to move 189. And let me say, I don't support moving 189. I don't think there's a reason to move it. There's no evidence to support moving it at this point. I'd like to see the airport stay a B2 airport. I don't support upgrading the classification of the airport. I think we need to keep it where it is, make sure it's safe for those flying in and out. But at this point, I don't see any reason to change it from B2.
Yeah, and then that Western Bypass, the Heber Parkway, any plans to move that forward? I mean, I think we're still talking like 15, 20 years in the future.
There's a lot of layers to the process. You know, when I ran for city council 2 years ago and I had some conversations with the folks at Mountainlands about proposed bypass routes, the map that they originally sent me never even showed the connectivity you would need out of that Western Bypass. My response to them was, well, how is this going to take traffic off of 40? And they said, well, it's not designed to do that. This is just going to be a local road. And I said, well, I don't think that's what folks in Heber are looking for. That's not meeting the need we have. And from there, conversations have continued. And now UDOT has been much more involved. Mountainlands is involved. And so we got the money from the state to do the environmental study earlier this year. That kicked off this fall. So the timeline they've given us for the environmental study is 2 to 5 years. We're all very hopeful that it will be on the two-year side, closer to that time than the 5-year side. But that's where we are now. But it's funded. The study's going on. And once that's completed, then we can start talking about routes and moving forward.
So what is the idea? I mean, is it to get the trucks off of 40 onto this bypass, or is it to have a local road so that unless you had business on Main Street, you wouldn't need to, I mean, you could get, you know, out of the traffic?
I think it would serve both purposes, but I think the primary focus and what's really animated the drive for a Western Bypass is to, yes, pull the trucks and tankers off of Main so you can have a walkable, thriving downtown. And I think part of it, too, is to try and just pull the through traffic off of Main. Cars that would never stop anywhere in Heber City anyway, let's keep that traffic moving so you have the local traffic and the folks who actually are there to do business stopping on Main Street, because we want to talk about having a thriving downtown core that's walkable, that has shops. I think of it a lot like the Field of Dreams analogy. If you build it, they will come. And so we have to create an environment that's friendly to receive those businesses and that's friendly to receive families to walk along. I have little kids and I wouldn't feel comfortable crossing Main Street to go from City Park to the Dairy Queen right now. It's just too dangerous. And so we can do better.
Sounds like you're ready to hit the ground running. I mean, what does a successful term on the council look like to you?
You know, a successful term for me looks at one that is able to get this general plan and the code updates knocked out next year. Let's get that done. Let's stay in contact constantly with UDOT to facilitate moving the bypass forward. And let's make sure that we stick to the general plan we adopt and hold developers to it and say we finally have something that reflects our vision for this community. And this is what we want to do, right? This is where we want the growth. This is where we want the open space. This is how we're going to address affordable housing and to continue to work with the public, to solicit public input, to do better about public outreach. We've made a lot of good strides in the last several years, but there's still a lot of ground to be covered. I'd like to see council members sitting down with Heber's local radio station to talk about the upcoming council agendas, just to make sure that we are as transparent and as communicative as possible.
Yeah. So when's your first meeting?
First meeting will be January 7th. We are sworn in at 5 o'clock, and then we get started right after that.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Ryan?
You know, thank you so much for having me. And to all of you listening out there in Heber, thank you so much for your support. I'm really excited to get started. And I think there's a lot of promise coming forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Ryan Stack again, Heber City Council member elect. 15 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. The Soldier Hollow Notary Center is opening tomorrow. On the phone to tell us what to expect, Jennifer McCullough. She's the guest engagement senior manager there at Soldier Hollow. Good morning to you, Jennifer.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. So is this opening later than normal, or do you always try to open up just before Christmas?
Yeah, this is typical of years past.
Okay. You have been able, though, to open because you've hosted some competitions there, the Nordic Combined, the cross-country portions there.
We have. Our trails are open, and we opened our cross-country trails earlier in December to season pass holders, and we were able to hold an event out here.
Oh, okay. So what are you opening with tomorrow?
So tomorrow our trails open to the public and our tubing lanes open to the public as well. So we'll be open starting at 10 a.m. Today we're having a concierge industry day. So industry partners are going to be able to come out and try tubing, and we'll be able to show them our offerings for the winter season. That's going on from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock this morning.
Okay, and so what will the hours be then once you're open?
So for the tubing holiday season, which runs through January 5th, we'll open every morning at 10 a.m., and most days will go until 8 p.m. Christmas and Christmas Eve holidays close a little bit earlier, but we are filling up sessions right now. It looks like we're going to have a really busy holiday season. And then something new that we started last year were our mini snowmobile rides for ages 4 to 12. Those will be starting up on Saturday. They will run 10 to 8 p.m. for the holiday season. And then after the holiday season, they'll continue, but they'll run Fridays through Mondays. But that's a really fun new event that we have out here that's getting really popular.
Okay. And then the tubing lanes, I mean, they'll also just be open weekends?
So the tubing lanes are 7 days a week through our entire winter season.
Okay.
So it's just the mini snowmobiles that are the long weekends, which are Friday through Monday. But, yeah, we're doing the same thing we do every year, which is having our winter tubing open every single day. And the hours change a little after the holiday season. But through the entire holiday season, we're open long days, 10 a.m. until 8 p.m.
Okay. And then how much skiing do you have?
So our trails are pretty much completely open. We've been able to make a lot of snow with these cold temperatures. We have a couple of small spots that we're working on getting covered right now, but our teams have been out there training, and we've had season pass holders out there skiing, and the skiing is fantastic.
Yeah, and in terms of the kilometer, how many Ks do you have?
30. So we have 30 kilometers, and they are pretty well groomed already.
Yeah. I've heard it's not easy skiing, or do you have some beginner loops?
So we do have some beginner skiing. It's not right outside of our day lodge. It's a little lower in the venue where our competition management building is. There's some really great beginner skiing down there. So once you're up here and you can kind of get familiar with the trails, there are definitely some beginner areas. You just have to get down to them.
Okay. And then in terms of ticketing, there are still season passes available for the skiing?
Yeah, so season passes, they're $150 for adults, $75 for youth, and $75 for seniors. And we have day passes as well. You can come out and ski for the day for $10 for an adult, $5 for a youth. And this on Saturday, to celebrate the opening of the season, we are having an opening day celebration. That day we will have skiing free all day. So it's a great opportunity to come out and try cross-country skiing. We'll have free mini lessons from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We can set you up with equipment and give you an overview of skiing. And then the trails for our opening day celebration on Saturday are free. So even if you're an experienced skier, come out and try our trails free for the day. And then in conjunction with the celebration of our opening day, we're going to have Waffle Love here all day. They'll be here from noon until 8 p.m. And then, again, the free mini lessons will be from 1 to 3 p.m. And then at 3 to 5 p.m., we'll have free photos with Santa Claus, free face painting, free hot chocolate. So it'll be a good time for families to come out and just have some holiday fun.
All right. Does Soldier Hollow offer cross-country ski lessons?
We do. So you can book cross-country ski lessons through the entire winter season. You can book them through our website. And we have group lessons available that, again, can be booked online, or you can call our Nordic Center and book private lessons as well.
All right. And do you also offer Nordic programs, biathlon, things like that?
Oh, yeah. So our teams are already training. So our development teams are in full swing, as long as our higher level competition teams. Our introductory beginner kickers and gliders program is starting after Christmas, so on December 30th, and that's for ages 6 to 12. And we want as many kids in the community to get involved in the sport, since we're right here in their backyard. So that's a great program to get started in.
Okay. And if people don't have the equipment, you also rent it?
We do. And for our sport programs, we include that in the cost of the program. But if you're coming out to ski on our trails for the day, we do have ski rentals available. And then again, if you want to try it out on Saturday, there's no charge for those, for the equipment.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Jennifer?
Something that a lot of people don't know we have is we do have snowshoes available out here for rent. And if somebody wants to do a guided snowshoe tour, we'll happily arrange that for them. And then we also have biathlon experiences. That is a really cool, unique, fun thing for groups to do. So that's something that can be arranged on an individual basis as well.
Okay. Hey, Jen, thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day.
Jennifer McCullough is the guest engagement senior manager there at the Soldier Hollow Nordic Center. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.